Okay, today we're learning Nida Samach Aleph. Okay, we're going to start at the very top. Before we start, I'm just going to review yesterday's Mishnah, because as soon as we finish the Mishnah, the Gemara is going to connect between the two Mishnayot. So yesterday we started with three women that were sleeping in a bed. If you remember, right, sounds like five little pigs sleeping in a bed. One fell off and bumped his head, you know. So, or the monkeys, all those different stories. They were jumping on the bed. Anyway, these are three women sleeping in a bed, and they find blood in the bed. So we said they're all Tameot, they're all considered impure, because we're not sure which is the one, unless one of them checks, sees she doesn't have blood, and then she can end up being exempted, and the other ones are, it's the opposite, I'm confusing it with the next one. It's if one of them finds out that she's Tameot, she checks and she sees blood, well then we exempt everybody else, and she's the only one who becomes Tameot. Now we get to the new Mishnah. Shalosh nashim shayu yishenot b'mita achat. It sounds exactly like the previous one. B'nimtza dam tachat ha'emtza'it. Now the three women are lying, kind of in formation, right? There's a big bed, one, two, three, each alongside the other. One is next to the wall. This really sounds like the pig one about one rolling off and falling off. Anyway, there are three next to each other, and we find blood. Nimtza dam tachat ha'emtza'it. If we find, we're now going to have the three options. Either we find it in the middle, we find it on the inside, or we find it on the outside. So if we find it on the inside, kulam tmeot, we're going to say, well, in the middle, everyone theoretically is next to the one in the middle, and therefore, theoretically, the blood could have been from either one, because we assume, as we learned a while back, with the clothing and the bed, that if you find a stain somewhere in the middle of the night, right, there's assumption that you move around the bed. If tachat hapnimit, if it's under the one next to the wall, Shtayim apnimiyot tmeot, meaning the inner one and the middle one. But the chitzonah tehora, because we're going to assume the outer one certainly isn't going to climb over. Yes, it's true, you might move a little in the middle of the night, but you're not going to climb over over one other person and get on all the way into the inside. Tachad chitzonah, so likewise, if it's under the outer woman, shtayim achitzoniyot tmeot, so the outer woman and the middle one will be impure, v'hapnimit tehora.
So the lesson is never sleep in the middle.
Right, never sleep in the middle, because you might get yourself into trouble.
Although you will be the warmest.
You will be warmest in the middle, that is true. Eimatai, so when is this? Bizman sha'avru, now this whole Mishnah is true only in which case? Bizman sha'avru derech mergilot hamita. Now there's different ways you could get into the bed, right? You could get into the bed from the side, or you could get into the bed from the foot of the bed. So if, now we talked about if it's found on the outside, if you find it on the outside, she's on the outside bed, so now I thought of bringing a little like a toy bed to the table to kind of illustrate. If you find on the outside, and how did they get into bed? Well, if the inner woman climbed over the bed to get to her spot, then theoretically the blood could have come from her. And therefore, we're going to say all of them become tmeot. Obviously, right, but if they all climbed in kind of into their lane, I was thinking the way you're swimming, okay, that, you know, everyone kind of climbs into lane. Last night we were driving and I went to a Hanukkah party and I was preparing on the way and we were in a highway, right? So it's kind of like the highway, right? Everyone's got their lane. So if you walk in through your lane, right, then obviously we're going to assume that you didn't touch the other side of the bed. But if you came in from the side, you climbed over the whole bed and therefore you would end up...
You would only need to do that if that was against the wall.
Right, exactly. They're describing it where the bed was against the wall. I have to assume... First of all, we've talked about this many times in general, other than some cases where we did talk about wealthy houses, but generally the houses were small. The bed would have to be up against the wall in most cases, otherwise it takes up too much space in the room. I don't think they had room to spare, so I assume they mean that the beds were against the wall, and obviously this would be true. If the bed wasn't against the wall, then it would go in all directions.
And okay. In this case, could they also not send them to check? And if they check, they could...
So we're going to get to checking soon, okay? Right, so then again, also if they check, maybe that would help. Now the Gemara says, the Mishnah says now, so if they went derech aleha, right, they climbed up over the bed, kulam tmeot, everyone's going to be impure. But ka'achat mehen, here's your question, Naomi, if one of them checked, v'nimtzei tehora, and she found out that she was... Now, here's the opposite of last week. That's why I got confused of yesterday. Because yesterday, she checked and she actually had blood. This time, she checks and she's clean. So, he tehora ushtayim tmeot. She can exempt herself, basically, and say, oh, look, I checked and I'm fine. But kushtayinu matzu tehorot. What if two of them check? So, again, Hein tahoro du shlishit tmeah. Now we get to the complicated case. What if shloshtan checked? They all three check, and they're all, none of them have blood. They all do an internal exam. No one's got blood there. Umatzu tahorot, right? And then they find they're all pure. So now we're stuck. There's blood on the bed. All of them say, hey, look. So kulan tmeot. They all go back to be out of a doubt. We're not sure where it came from. They're all impure. Lemaha davar domeh. Now the Gemara brings in, the Mishnah brings an example, which the Gemara is going to question. Why did they bother bringing this example? They're going to compare it to another case where we have three things and we're not sure where the tumah was from. So now we're going to move on to tumat meit, which is a dead body. A part of a dead body is found underneath a pile of rocks. If the pile of rocks is kind of in a formation, it forms a type of tent over it. And we have what's called tumat ohel, where anything under, anything in that structure, this pile of rocks, anything underneath it is going to be impure if there's a piece of flesh of a dead body that's more than an olive bulk's worth. So, right, the size of an olive. So now they say, lema davar domeh, legal tameh, shenitarev ben shnei galim tohorim. This sounds a little like three carb Monty, right? You have one pile that's tameh, and nitarev ben shnei galim tohorim, and there's a little piece of dead body under one of them, you're not sure which one. Ubadku achat mehen umatzu tahor. So if you check one and you don't find any piece of dead body there, well, it's fine then. Hu tahor u'shnayim tmeim, right? So it's going to be tahor, but the other two are tmeim. Shnayim umatzu tahorim, heim tahorim u'shlishi tameh. Shloshtan umatzu tahorim, but if you check all three, exact same thing, and you find their tahor, kulam tmeim divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says, everything's fine now. They all become problematic, just like with the woman. Even though you didn't find under any of them, the assumption is it's somewhere, and therefore they're all tameh.
Yeah. But circumstantial evidence overrules direct evidence.
Yeah, so in this case. So here he says, Rabbi Meir omer, kol davar shehu, here's his klal, okay? This is his principle. Kol davar shehu b'chezkat tum'ah, anything that was established that it's impure, and that we knew there was a dead body there or a part of a dead body. So anything that was established and it's bechezkat tmeah, it's assumed to be tmeah, la'olamu b'tumato ad shivadalecha tumah hechanu. We're going to assume, right? This is like innocent or proven guilty, right? This is almost the opposite. This, we knew that it was guilty. We knew that it was impure. So until we find the tumah, until we find what happened to that piece of dead body, well, we're going to assume they're tameh, in which case, since we looked here, we looked there, and there's no proof, so we're going to have to just assume they're all impure out of a doubt. But if you notice, so the Mishnah compared these two cases, but notice this was said only in the name of Rabbi Meir. Chachamim disagree. The rabbis disagree about this case. And later, the Gemara is going to have to explain, well, why, right? And number one, why do we compare it, and why do Chachamim disagree? So Chachamim omrim, bodek ad shemegia lasela o lebitula. You have to check until what? Until you get to a hard rock or virgin soil. Okay, so now we're going to say, you can't just assume because you didn't find, any dead body underneath. You have to check really well, okay? But once you check really well and you don't find anything and you get to either rock where there's not going to be a dead body underneath there, or you get to virgin soil where for sure there's nothing underneath there, at that point you can assume it's not tameh at all, in which case we're going to say then we can actually exempt all three. In other words, you've looked, you've checked, there's nothing there. Okay, we'll get back to this, but this reminds me of my house, right? How many times has this happened in your house where somebody's missing something and they say, I checked everywhere and I couldn't find it, and then somehow miraculously it's found, right? And usually in my house it's me. I have to come and, you know, I can't find it, and somehow I'm the one who ends up finding all the lost items. But here they say, no, if you check and you really check well, we can assume it's not there. So this is the end of the Mishnah. So now the Gemara is going to start questioning the Mishnah. The first question is comparing this Mishnah to the previous Mishnah. Maishna resha de lo maflig, u maishna seifa de kamaflig. What's the difference between the resha? Now, resha means the first part of the Mishnah. In this case, we're comparing two Mishnayot. So we're saying the previous Mishnah, where the three women were in the bed, and we didn't start distinguishing which position on the bed they were sleeping. U maishna seifa de kamaflig. And what's the difference between the next Mishnah, where we start making a distinction? So, Amar Rabbi Ami b'mishulavot. Okay, now we're going to say that the women in this bed, everyone was in their lane. Okay, let's go back to the image of the cars on the highway. But in the other one, everyone was changing lanes all the time, right? They were kind of, not exactly changing lanes, but they were intertwined. Okay, I don't know exactly how these women were sleeping intertwined, but somehow they were intertwined. Okay, so that's another, that's a possible difference between the two Mishnayot. But ka'achat. So now we want to know, lama li limitne limaze dome. Why do we have to bring this example of the pile of rocks? What did it help us, right? In other words, we understood the case pretty well. What did the comparison help for? So they say, Hachi ka'amalehu Rabbi Meir l'Rabbanan. If you remember, what did I say? There was a big difference because in the first case, nobody disagreed. In the case with the women, with the case with the rocks, there was a disagreement here. So this is what Rabbi Meir said to the rabbis. Rabbi Meir is bringing this comparison to say, hey, look, these two cases are comparable, and why don't you agree with me in the rock case? Maishna b'dam de lo pagitu. He says, when it came to the blood and the women, you didn't disagree with me. Umaishna b'gal de pagitu. And why, when it came to the rocks, the pile of stones, did you say, well, if we don't find it, we can assume the dead body's not there anymore? So v'rabanan, now we're going to explain why, again, we're not, the Gemara is not living at the time of those rabbis, but the Gemara is giving a reason as to what they might have thought. V'rabanan bishlama hatam ema orev nitala, it's very likely that a bird came along, a raven, and picked up the, right, it's one thing, yes, there was a dead piece of dead flesh, but dead flesh gets eaten up by all sorts of creatures, and therefore the blood had to have come from somewhere. The dead body definitely was there, but the fact that it was there at some point doesn't mean it's there now. Elahacha, but in this case, with the blood, haidam mehecha'ata, the blood had to have come from somewhere. So it's very nice that all the women check, and nobody seems to have blood there, but it doesn't. It had to have come from one of them. And now we're going to have a number of cases. Tanya. Amar Rabbi Meir. Okay, right near us. There was a case where there was a sycamore tree in Kfar Saba. It was known that there was a dead, there were dead bones buried underneath, or dead bones somewhere underneath the tree. They checked, they couldn't find any bones at all. Liyamim, okay, so now what would you assume? Based on what the rabbi said, we can assume there were some dead flesh, something, dead bones, somebody, you know, some animal came, took them away, or wind came, blew it away. Anyway, speaking of winds, liyamim nashva bo haruach. At some point, though, as you know, the day, at some point in the future, a big wind came, va'akarto, and uprooted the tree. Now, when the tree uprooted, what happened? Nimtzal gulgolet shel mei tchuva lo bikaro. They found under the roots there was a skull of a dead body. Amrulo. So now, this was Rabbi Meir's proof to the rabbis. Very nice that you say we checked and it's not there, but look at this case. They checked. They did a very thorough job, but they didn't realize that it was under the ground. Amrulo, so the rabbi said to him, Misham Raya, this is where you're trying to prove your point from? Ema lobatku called Sarko. I go back to my image of my house, right? They just didn't check well enough. And if they really checked well, they would have dug down under the roots of the tree and they would have found it. So he's saying, don't give me an example from someone who didn't do a good job checking. Okay, that doesn't prove anything. Now, it's actually a good question whether it proves or doesn't prove, because what's lacking in the Mishnah here, in the Gemara here, is how would one determine, at what point can we assume that it was checked well? That the rabbis are assuming, well, if it's checked well, now where's that, right, it's a scale, right, of well to not well, right? Super well, not well. Where would you, you know, so they were maybe on this side, right? What if you're in the middle? It's very unclear here about when the rabbis would say, now we know that you've checked well enough and it's fine. So that's a good question. And again, when you go back to the analogy in your house, how many times did it happen that people think that they check really well and then it turns out the item actually ends up being found? So you have to be very careful here to say, well, we checked, right? Although the rabbis still stick with their position. Okay. Another case, Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yossi, Maaseh b'Maharah shel Shichin. There was a cave in this area of Shichin. The Shayu machzikim batuma. Again, people assumed that there was tuma there. They knew it was somehow they knew. Ubadku ad shigiu lakarka shaita chalaka ketzipor. And they dug. They finally got to very smooth ground. It was smooth like a nail, you know, like a fingernail. Vilomatsu, they didn't find anything. Liyamim. So again, they assumed there must not be any dead body under here. There were workers in the area. They went into the cave to get away from the rain, protect from the rain. V'nitzu b'kardamotehen, and they started digging with their axes. U'matzu machtesha mele'at samot, and they found a whole big pit full of bones. Okay, so here you see again, people checked or assumed, but they didn't check well enough. So again, the same conversation is going to happen. Amru lo, right? So this was all Rabbi Meir telling the rabbis, look, you know, if you want to rely on people checking, people aren't so reliable. Amru lo, misham ra'yan, you're going to prove it from here. Amar lo bat kukol tzarko. You can just assume they didn't do a good job checking. Okay, Tanya, another case. Abba Shaul omer, ma'aseh b'sela beit choron, shayu machzikim batuma v'lo yachlu chachamim livdok, mipnei shayta merubah. There was bedrock that they also, they had someone told them there was tumah there, but it was just a big area and it was very hard to check the bedrock. It's very hard and solid. Bayasham zaken echad. It's often the elderly people who have perspective and know how to deal with things. Rabbi Yoshua ben Chananya shmo, and this is his name. His name is Rabbi Yoshua ben Chananya. Amar lahen haviu listinim. He says, bring me some sheets. Haviu lo stinim. They brought him the sheets. Ushraam b'mayim. He got them soaked in water. Upasana lehen. Okay, and now he takes those wet sheets and he puts it all over the bedrock. Makom tahara yavesh, makom tum alach. He says to them, anywhere underneath where it will stay dry, then you know it's just bedrock. But anywhere where it gets wet, why is it going to get wet? Because the ground is going to absorb the water. Then you know it's soft. Ubatku matzu bor gadol malei atzamot. Okay, and they found this big ditch full of atzamot. In other words, they obviously found where it got wet. They dug down and they found it. Okay, good solution. Now we're going to get off on an interesting tangent. Tana, okay, this is what we call the law of conservation of biblical characters and biblical things. And okay, we're going to now say that which is the midrashim often like to say, if we have something, they want to connect it to something else that we know. In other words, they basically say, why would the rabbis have found, where is this pit of full of tons of dead bodies, right? We have this Holocaust image in our head when we think of a pit full of dead bodies. So, right, what? They didn't have a Holocaust. You know, why would there be a pit full of dead bodies? So they try to find somewhere in the Tanakh where somebody killed a lot of people and put them in a pit. So where is that? They say, Tana, it's known, Hu habor shemilei Yishmael ben Netanyah chalalim. This is the pit that Yishmael, the son of Netanyah, filled with dead bodies. Yachtiv, if you remember who this is. V'habor asher ishlich sham Yishmael et kol pigrei ha'anashim asher hika biya Gedalia. Okay, we know about Tzom Gedalia, the fast of Gedalia. That was instituted at the end of the first temple. The Babylonians came in and took over, and the Jews were still living there, and they put Gedalia as the head. And Gedalia, and with Yirmiyahu also, the prophet, they said, let's, you know, make peace with them, let's not rebel against them. And there was a whole group of people that said, no, 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 we have to rebel against them. And Yishmael is sent from Ammon, and he's sent to basically kill, assassinate, right? It's the first assassination. He's sent to assassinate Gedalia, and he goes and he assassinates Gedalia. Okay, and it's this big, terrible thing that happens, and we're going to learn, I'll tell you some other details that are going to come up in a minute, which is Yochanan ben Kareach, he comes to Gedalia and warns him that Yishmael is going to kill him, and he doesn't heed the warning. Gedalia doesn't heed the warning, and as a result, he gets killed. Okay, and not only does he get killed, because that wouldn't give us a boar full of bones, but they killed all the people that were with Gedalia. And then it says in the verse there, we're going to read it right now in Yirmiyahu, it says, V'habor asher ishlich sham Yishmael et kol pigrei anashim, right? This is the boar, right? And that this isn't necessarily our boar, but the Gemara connects it, that this is the same pit. The Yishmael threw all the dead bodies of the people. Now, here's a very weird part of the verse. Asher hika biyad Gedalia, that he hit through the hands of Gedalia. Now, this is strange. What? Gedalia didn't, he was killed. He didn't kill, it sounds like, through Gedalia. Was Gedalia's fault. So the Gemara asks immediately, okay, so the first thing we did was we connected this pit that they found under the bedrock to, it must have been that pit of the people that were killed in the time that Yishmael killed, through the hands of Gedalia. V'chi Gedalia haragan, what did Gedalia really kill them? V'lo Yishmael haragan, he was the one who killed them. Ela, and here's the best line of today's daf, Ela mitoch shahayalo lachush la'atzat Yochanan ben Kareach, v'lo chash, because he should have heeded the warning and he didn't listen, ma'ale alav ha'katuv ki'ilu haragan. It's as if he caused his own death. He wasn't responsible. But here it gets even...
It caused all the others, though.
And it caused the others' death. He was responsible for really everyone else's death. He was obviously responsible for
himself. That's mentioned the end of the kingdom and the fall of independence, but all
right. Right. Well, not necessarily. I mean, they had already kind of lost to the Babylonians. But anyway, so now Amar Rava, here's the big line. Hi, Lishna Bishi. He takes this to a general principle. And he says, when you hear something bad, somebody tells you a rumor, something you're not sure it's true or not. Okay, this goes on in the newspapers all the time, right? They write things that people don't know. How do we view this, right? There are people who are accused of things in our government, other governments, right? People are accused. We don't know, are they? Is it true? Is it not? So if somebody spreads rumors about someone or tells you something, in this case, he told him this guy's about to kill you, should he have trusted him or not? So generally we say, well, it's lashon hara, it's bad, you know, people are just saying, spreading bad. They're slandering people. Even though you're not allowed to accept it, you do have to be careful, though. In other words, listen with half an ear, okay? You shouldn't accept it and think badly of the person. On the other hand, you have to protect yourself. And he didn't. Now we're going to have another story where this happens. Hanu b'nei Galila. There were people in the Galil, and this also you can imagine happening nowadays. D'nafakalayu kala d'katal nafsha. There was a rumor spread about them that they had killed a human being. Atu l'kamei d'Rabbi Tarfon. So the people who were accused, or who were, the rumor was spread that they had killed someone, they came before Rabbi Tarfon. Amrule litmarin anmar. They went to Rabbi Tarfon. Now Rabbi Tarfon was very wealthy. So they went to him and they said, please hide us. They knew that he had the means to hide them. Amar Lahusi says, Hechini Avid. He says, what am I supposed to do? Id lo atmarin chu chazu yataychu. Atmarin, if I don't hide you, well, the authorities are going to get you and for sure they're going to kill you. I assume he's talking about the foreign authorities that were ruling. Atmarin chu, but if I do hide you, ha'amar rabbanan, don't the rabbis say, ha'ilish nebishna, if you hear some rumor, afa gavda the kabule lo mabai, even though you can't accept it, mechash lehu mabai, you have to be concerned for it. Maybe you really did kill this person, and then, number one, I don't want to protect you because you should be killed, punished, right? In those cases, it was capital punishment. And number two, think about it, it's a little dangerous to put them in your house. Maybe they really killed. So what does he tell them? Here's his solution. I don't know if you come up with a possible solution, what you could do. He says to them, Zilu atan timu nafshaychu. You guys are on your own. Go protect yourselves in your own way. In other words, maybe it's also you got yourselves into some situation. People don't generally slander unless there's something you must have done. You got yourselves into the situation. You got to get yourselves out of it. I can't be involved. It's very interesting, right? We have a lot of situations nowadays where people seek protection. And, you know, it's always a question, do we give them protection or not? Do we know if they're legit, not legit? How do we treat this? And it's very, very relevant. I don't know if it was fair that he told them, just, you know, go deal with it yourself. Because why? Obviously, they couldn't. They came to him because they didn't have a way to protect themselves. So in a sense, you know, he didn't really, that was his solution. Okay, now, continuing on, we're going to now digress for a bit and then come back. Vayomer Hashem Moshe. Al tira, period. Okay, they don't give you the rest of the pasuk. So this is often the Gemara assumes you know the rest of the verse. So Hashem says to Moshe, don't fear. What was he telling him? Don't fear from Og. There were two big kings in the time of the Torah. There was Og, the king of Bashan, and Sihon, the king of the Amorites. So he says to him, don't fear Og. But it doesn't ever say, don't fear Sihon. So why was he fearful of Og and not of Sihon? Michte Sichon va'og achehavu. They were brothers, according to the Midrash. De'amar mar, as it said, Sichon va'og b'nei achia ben sham chazai. That was their father. Havu, they were both brothers. So ma'ishnami og de'kimistefe u'ma'ishnami Sichon de'lokamistefe. Why was he scared of Og? That God had to say, don't fear him. And he wasn't scared of Sichon. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Rabbi Yochanan says in the name of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, Mitshuvato shalato tzadik atayodea ma'haya b'libo. From the fact that he needed protection, you know that he was worried. Why? Amar, Shema ta'amod lo zchut. This goes back to the idea that there's only X number of people that existed in that time. And if we know of some random person, it must be someone we know. Which is really, why does the Midrash do that? Because they want you to see faces. They want you, random people don't really stick in our minds. What sticks in our minds? Someone who we know about from somewhere else. So there's going to be another case. We're going to go all the way back to Avraham Avinu. If you remember, Avraham Avinu, Lot gets captured, and he gets taken into captivity, and this palit, who was a refugee, comes running out and tells Avraham that Lot was taken captive, and as a result, Avraham goes to war against the four kings. There's the war of the five kings versus the four kings, and Avraham basically goes to war to get to save Lot. So now we're going to see this. So what? Amar Shemata Amolos Chuchal Avraham Avinu. Maybe Og will be protected by what he did with Avraham. Shneamar Vayavoha Palit Vayagel Avraham Aivri. The refugee ran and told Avraham, the Hebrite. Va'amar Rabbi Yochanan Ze. Now notice it says Hapalit. Hapalit means the refugee. Now when the Torah just says a refugee, so a refugee is a random person. Because it says the refugee, the Midrash says, oh, we must know who this person is. Who could it possibly be? And they talk about someone where there's a tradition that Og, and we're going to see he spanned many generations. Okay, he was this person that kind of lived a very long time. Again, this is in the world of not reality, but Midrash. Where was he running away from? Well, he was a refugee from the time of the flood. Okay, he was a refugee from the time of the flood. So now, what's the issue? Where does this come up? Well, what does this have to do with what we were talking about? Og came and gave Avram a message, and theoretically, it could have just been a rumor, and it might not have been true, and it actually caused an entire war. Okay, and actually some of the commentaries say this wasn't actually a good thing, because he shouldn't, a war is never a good thing, and it wasn't necessarily a good thing that this happened, but because he told Avram that Lot was taken into captivity, Avram didn't say, oh, I'm not going to accept your Lashon Hara, I'm going to actually act upon it, and he went and acted upon it. And as a result, we get back to, well, that's why Moshe was scared of Og, because he thought Og had this good deed that he did, and God would therefore protect Og against Moshe, and that's why Moshe was scared of him. Okay. Tanu Rabbanan, that was all the interesting Midrashim stories of today's stuff. We're now going back to spots. Okay, by the way, this is a good classic example where we've been dealing for a while with all sorts of spotting issues and seemingly a little bit, I would say dry, right, wet spots. But anyway, not the most fascinating ripping material. And Gemara always likes to throw in some stories and some interesting things, and then getting off into values, right? This is a really important values discussion. When you hear something and you don't know if it's true, how seriously do you have to take? There's a fine balance you have to strike between accepting, not accepting it on the one hand, and yes, accepting it to protect yourself. Tanu Rabbanan. So the rabbis learned, Beged she'ava bo ketem, if you have a cloth that has, or clothing that has a spot on it, and you want to purify it. Now there's, generally we can purify it in a mikveh, but it has to be clean. You can't purify something that's dirty by just putting it in a mikveh. That doesn't work. But the problem is, you can't find the spot. Now this goes back to, right, any of us who do laundry, how often does it happen where you stain something and you're looking very carefully, where's the spot, you can't find it. So here you had something, you knew there was a ketem, but you can't find it. Ma'avir alav shiv'a samimanim. It was known that there were these seven cleaning materials, so you use all seven of those cleaning materials to get it off. And, at this point, you just assume that since you went through all seven cleaning materials, which are going to come up in the next Mishnah, we're not going to see that today, but if you've put all the seven cleaning materials on, then you can assume that the spot's no longer there. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer, bodko shchunot shchunot. You check it by section. Okay, you check, right? This is how you would, again, this goes back to if you've lost something. Before we were talking about losing something, now you just can't find the spot. So check section by section by section really carefully, and you'll eventually find it. In a minute, we're going to talk about what's the size of each section when they say section. Avdabo shichvat zera. If you have a spot of semen on a cloth, which again will make it impure. Hadash, now it's going to depend on whether your clothing is new or old. If it's new, we can assume the threads are very tight, in which case there's one way of finding it. And if it's old, we're going to assume the threads are loose, in which case you won't be able to find it the first way. We'll have to come up with another method. Bodko b'machat, you put a needle in. Now, how will a needle help? Well, the assumption is, first of all, we've learned that semen is only tameh if it's still moist. So we're going to assume it dried out somewhat, and if you put a needle in it, it'll kind of get stuck on something on it, and then you'll see, right, and it'll be moist on the inside. Shachuk, if it's already worn down, bodko b'chama, you check it in the sun. This is, I know I do this. If you can't find the spot, the best way to find it is get good sunlight, okay, or good light in your room, but in your house, but sunlight's even better, and they obviously didn't have lights like we have, so sunlight's the best. Tana. Now we're just having a braita explaining about the bodko shchunot shchuno by section. Ein shchuna pchota mishalosh etzbaot. This goes back to the size we saw the other day. Each section has to be a minimum of 3 by 3 fingers breadth. Okay, so you know, kind of this size. Okay, that's the, so you check. Now it's minimum. In other words, don't check even smaller than that. Basically, you can check. I'll look at this area, that area, that area. Okay, and go through the cloak like that. Now we're moving on to another, a similar idea where you can't find something, but a totally different halacha. We're going to talk about chatnez. Chatnez is when you combine combine wool and linen. You're not allowed to wear clothing that has wool and linen mixed in. So it says here, beged tanu rabanan, beged sha'ava bo kilayim. You had a cloak that had wool and linen mixed in, but you can't find, let's say it's a linen piece of clothing, you can't find the wool strand in it. So now, maybe it's there, maybe it's not there, but even if it is there, it's not noticeable. So now they say, you can't sell it to a non-Jew. What's the concern? Concern is that the non-Jew will sell it back to a Jew. Now, there were a lot of interactions with them in those days, like there are today. And if you sell it to them, well, they'll sell it back to someone else, or maybe even to you, and you won't, because it's not noticeable, the Jew will end up with a beged that's mixed up, right? And you can't use it to make a saddle out of it for your donkey, because again, you might come take it off your donkey and use it and forget that it had this other strand in it, and you might end up being obligated for shatnez. Aval, here's a really interesting one. Another interesting tangent of today's daf. Osimi menu tachrichin lamet. You can use it, even though maybe it's shatnez, for a dead person to put the shrouds on the dead body, because once a person's dead, well, there's no issue of them wearing a clothes with shatnez. Okay, that's maybe interesting, maybe not so interesting, but get this line. Amar Rav Yosef, zot omeret, one can infer from here, mitzvot betelot lati lavo. He's thinking beyond the grave. What's beyond the grave? Well, there's this belief that there's going to be resurrection of the dead. Now imagine this dead body is lying in his shrouds, gets resurrected, and the first thing he does is he's wearing shatnez. It's going to take him a minute to get the shatnez off when he wakes up, you know, and he might not even realize it's shatnez because it's not noticeable because it got lost in there, and he's going to end up. So what does he say? The fact that we're not worried about this proves that there's not going to be mitzvot in the future. Now, this is a classic example of the rabbi struggling with what's going to be in the afterlife and trying to kind of, oh, you said that? Well, that must mean that there aren't going to be mitzvot in those days, which is very interesting, right? Okay, so that's what he says. However, Amar Le Abaye, Abaye comes and says to him, V'itema Rav Dimi, some people think it wasn't Abaye, it was Rav Dimi, V'ha'amar Rav Imeni, Amar Rav Yanai, but doesn't Rav, so either Abaye said it or Rav Dimi said it. Often we're not sure who says, things get passed down, we're not sure who said them. They said, as in response to what Rav Yosef said, how can you say that there's not going to be mitzvot in the future? You can imagine. People got a little bit in an uproar about this. What do you mean? Right? Mitzvot seem to us the most eternal thing, commandments. This is, right? It's eternal. You would think also in the future. So didn't Rabbi Meni say in the name of Rabbi Yanai, lo shanu ela lesafdo, aval lekovro asur. They said the whole thing that you can put the burial shrouds that have this shatnez in them is only while you're eulogizing the dead body. But when you bury it, you can't bury it in it. So that proves exactly that. All the more, there are, of course, mitzvot, and of course you can't do it. They're clearly not worried. I guess there's signs that come before Tchiyat HaMetim. They're not worried that the moment that you're eulogizing, all of a sudden the body's going to be resurrected, right? There's a process that's going to happen before that happens. So it won't be immediate, but you can't bury them in them. So Amar Lei, Rav Yosef responds back. Lav itmar ala, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Wasn't it said about that Rabbi Yochanan said that you quoted Rabbi Mary in the name of Rabbi Yana, but I can quote Rabbi Yochanan who says vafilu lekovro, even you're allowed to bury him. Okay, in other words, Rav Yosef isn't satisfied with their question, and he says, no. Our tradition says, you know, the one that I learned was you can even bury him in it, and now they're going to say that Rabbi Yochanan the Tame, he goes according to his own, right, he's consistent within where he says, because he says elsewhere, to Amar Rabbi Yochanan, my dichtiv bametim chofshi, it's a pasuk in Tehillim, where it says, the dead bodies will be free. What is free? Kevan shemet adam naaseh chofshi min ha-mitzvot. It was an interesting way of looking at mitzvot, right? It's saying, mitzvot, don't make, right, it's almost in a bit of a negative way, but we can talk about that in a minute, which is that mitzvot kind of limit your freedom, and the dead people are going to be totally free, and they assume that they mean dead people forever, right? Even in the afterlife. Okay, that they'll be free. What is free? Free from mitzvot. Of course, you know, being free from mitzvot, and here it's looked at almost as a positive thing, but, you know, the commandments obviously give structure, and sometimes freedom is not always the
free from obligation.
Right, free from obligation, but not necessarily in a, that I don't think they mean it in a negative way, that because you have mitzvot, you're bound, you know, it's a positive thing that we have, but you won't need that in the future. Amar Rav from Bar Papa, which again, gets into a whole interesting discussion, which for Daf Yomi class we don't have time to deal with, but about the meaning of mitzvot. If mitzvot aren't eternal and they're not going to be in the future, then what is the purpose for them? Is it only in this world? Why in this world? Why do we need them? Here especially, they're raising this issue that you're not exactly free. Is that a good thing? Anyway, a lot of questions could be raised from this. What?
Right,
the way we talk about the yoke of God is upon you. It's right. And then what? So you're not going to have that in the future?
It won't feel burdensome.
Or, right, it won't feel burdensome. Maybe that's one way of looking at it. If that, maybe it's the way you approach it. Right. But again, it's really clearly saying here, you won't have the mitzvah. Okay? You won't be part of the commandments. Okay. Amar Rav Ram Bar Papa, Amar Rav Chista. So now we're continuing in this Beged She'avah Bo Kilayim. Okay, so Rav Ram Bar Papa says in the name of Rav Chista, again, if you have a piece of clothing that you can't find the kilayim, he gives you another solution. You see here, today's stuff, there's a lot of places where somebody provides one solution, somebody provides a different solution. He says, oh, here's a good way to do it. Color it, dye it. If you dye it, it'll then be permitted. We're going to see why in a minute. Amar le Rav le Rav Ram Bar Papa, minale le sabahach. Where did my elder, right, you're my elder, where did you get this from? What does dyeing have anything to do? Okay, so you've dyed it. Now it's a nice, pretty color. That helps. Amar le matznitani says, oh, I get it from a Mishnah. Ditznan. Bodek ad shemigia lasela. You check until you get to the rock. Ve'ileka, and if you can't find it, remember this is our Mishnah. Amar orev nitala. You can assume that what? That a raven came and ate the piece of dead body. What does that have to do? What?
That it's not there anymore.
Right, it's not there anymore. So hachanami, what does that have to do with this? Amra bikitna, okay, that's wool and flax, which are the two items that you can't put together. Behadade, okay, those two together, lo salik lehut siva. They don't accept the dye in the same way. And because they don't accept the dye in the same way, what will happen? You'll immediately notice if there's a difference. If there's a difference in the color, you'll say, ah, that's the strand that's problematic. And if not, v'kevan de lo yedia, emar min tarnata. And if you don't see any difference, well, then you'll know that it must have fallen out, that string. Amar Rav Acha b'rei de Rav Yiva mishmei de marzutra. Haiman de rame chuta de kitna biglime de amra. If somebody had sewn in a strand of flax in their cloak made of wool, v'natke, and he pulls it out. Now, what's the problem? Okay, so he put it in, and now he pulls it out. It should be fine. However, lo yada inatik ilo natik. He's not sure if he pulled it out entirely. Think about it. You pull out a string. Okay, I know Razel, you know, does a lot of knitting. So you pull out a string. What happens? You're not sure if the whole thing comes out or not. Shapir dami. So you can assume it's fine. You don't have to worry about it. So now they say, well, seems weird, my time. Generally, we have principles. If something is a Torah law, and Shanes is a Torah law, what do we say? If you're not sure about something, we go lechumra. We're more strict. If something's from the rabbis, we're more lenient. So this seems like it's from the Torah. So why would we be lenient here? So they say, midoraita Shanes k'tiv. Now they're going to, this they do very often, it's called notrikon in Hebrew, where you take a word. It's like the opposite of abbreviation, or it's like abbreviation, but a little bit different. That you look at a word and you say that word is a shortened version of a few different words. It's like an abbreviation. But shatnez dichtiv ad shia shua tave venus. Okay, shua is combed, has to be combed, the flax and the wool together, and spun and embroidered, okay, or woven together. So it needs all three. And this was only woven together and it doesn't have the others. Rabbanan who degazrube, but the rabbis came and said, no, even if it's just one of them, and then the kevan de lo yade inatke sharian, since he's not sure whether the whole thing was pulled out or not, he knows he pulled it out, he's just not sure if the whole thing came out, will be mekel. Matke pla Ravashi, Ravashi now questions and says, Imor, no, I disagree with you. You could say, even though the word shatnez can be darshan as shua, tave, the news. It's Oshua, Otavi, Onus. It's this or that or that. Okay? And therefore, it should be Midoraita, it should be from the Torah law, and we should be strict. So now the Gemara gives us the halacha, which it doesn't usually do, but sometimes, v'hilchata, the halacha is kimar zutra, like the first opinion. And why is that? Midav kinu rachmana b'chad alishna. Because the Torah writes it as one word, we assume it means all of those have to be in there in order for it to be by Torah law. Which is interesting. It means that we can be more lenient in Sha'nez midoraita, because Sha'nez is only going to be if all those processes were done to it, you know, all of them were done with the two together. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan, another source. Beged savua metame mishum ketem. We're going to end with this issue, which is a very interesting, relevant issue also. If you have colored garments, then you're still, we're still even, okay, now what's the issue? If you're wearing a colored garment and you see blood on it, well, the color, remember we talked a lot about colors and it depends on what color it is, well, the color is going to be off if it's on a colored, colored clothing. But the first opinion says, doesn't matter. If you find something red on colored clothing, it's a problem. Rabbi Natan bar Yosef omer, eino metameh mishum ketem. He says, no, it's not a problem at all. Shelot, and here's this interesting line, which we're going to have to struggle to understand, the Gemara is going to struggle to understand. Shelot tiknu bigdei tzivonim lisha ela lahakela kitmehen. The reason why they told women they should wear colored clothing, they instituted, according to this, that women wear colored clothing in order to protect their spotting. And this is something, if you take family purity classes, they'll often recommend this, that if you find spots on colored clothing, on colored underwear, you don't have to worry about them at all. And that's based on this opinion that we hold by. Okay? Now, the weird part about this is what the Rabbis Institute, first of all, I was thinking about in Portugal. Everything's very colorful. When I went to visit there, right? The buildings are colorful. It's almost like the rabbis say, yeah, women should wear colorful clothing. Like it's a thing. Okay. And the reason is to protect their tummy. So the Gemara asks, Tiknu, my Tiknu, what do you mean they instituted? Who instituted that women should wear colored clothing? Never heard of that. Now, what he says is he proves his point. By saying that the rabbis instituted colored clothing for women, it must be because they wanted to protect so that they don't get themselves into situations where they end up being impure. So he says, again, this is all to protect, not if a woman's actually got a flow of blood, but only if she sees a spot. So if you wear colored, you don't have to worry about it. So they say, so who instituted this? Ella shelo hutru bigdei tzivonim lisha ela la'akela kitmehen. Now they come up with another interesting answer. They say, they only allowed women to wear colored clothing, almost like they didn't want women to wear colored clothing at all. Maybe, I don't know, you know, for whatever reason, like women should wear basically boring, non-colored clothing. But they allowed it in order to be, you know, so they could be more lenient with their spots. So now the Gemara says, that doesn't make any sense either. Hutru mechlal de asire? What? You think it, you're trying to say it was forbidden to wear colored clothing? Who says that, right? Look around the table. People are wearing, a lot of women are wearing black, but some are wearing pink, okay? So the Gemara says, in. In fact, it was asur. Ooh, whoa. Interesting. Okay, don't worry. Ditznan, as the Mishnah says, bepumul shel aspasianus. This was right before the destruction of the temple, of the second temple. There were a lot of bad things going on to the Jews. And when bad things are going on, what do? Well, they institute, we should institute, you know, we shouldn't do things that are overly happy. Okay, so there was a certain time period. Not that it's forbidden, don't worry, you're okay, Judy. Not that you're forbidden to wear colored clothing, but there was a certain period in time where they made a number of restrictions. Gazrua atarot chatanim, that the they would glorify themselves with these fancy crowns when they got married. They said, no doing that. Va'al ha'irus, this was a certain musical instrument they used at parties. They said, no more using that. And bikshu l'gzorah b'gdei tzivonim, and they wanted to add to the list, no colored clothing. Amre ha'adifa k'dei l'hakel ha'kitzmehem. But then, in response, they said, no, don't do that, because there's something else going on here. We'd rather protect the women from their spotting issues, and therefore, even though maybe there was a reason to possibly say they shouldn't wear colored clothing, they overrode it because of the greater good, that we'd rather have women that are not in these situations of being impure, right, if we can avoid it. And this is a very important thing in general about spotting. If you remember, we talked about that the whole thing is all on a rabbinic level, and because of that, they try in any way they can to allow people to avoid getting into spotting issues, especially as we know that women do generally spot in all kinds of different times in their lives, whether they're on certain birth control pills or it creates problems. And there's a lot of halachic ways of how to get out of it. And this is one of the very basic ones, right? We talked before about the size and other things, but this is one of the really basic ones that helps avoid a lot of issues.